You're listening to KDNK's public affairs program For Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, today. And we have a fellow writer with us, a special guest, John Fahey. Welcome, John. Good to have you on the show. You know, you've had quite a long career in journalism as a reporter, an editor, a publisher, and a co-owner of Mountain Gazette. And what a great publication that was in print. You're also an author of about 10 books and fairly recently a blogger. You came to Colorado, I think, to be the editor of the Summit Daily News back in, when was that, 1989, I guess? And then you moved to Silver City, New Mexico. What prompted you to move from Colorado, John?
Well, I lived in Summit County, as you said, and it's really, really cold there. And that was a big attraction for a lot of years. And when I first moved to Summit in 89, and I actually moved to Colorado from New Mexico in 82, I lived in Grand County for a while and then lived in Denver and then moved to Summit to help start the Summit Daily News. And my first winter there, I was in a drinking establishment, and it was April, and it was one of those spring snowstorms with big half-dollar size flakes splatting against everything, and I had a big smile on my face and was thinking how cool this is, and I was talking to somebody who had a frown on her face, and she said, "I used to think like you, and one day you'll get tired of this."
Right.
And I was shoveling my roof one day, one of those winters where it just snowed and snowed and snowed, and I came in and I said, "This is it. 24 years of living in cold and shoveling," and I said, "I'm out of here," and I went back to New Mexico.
As a native New Mexican, I sometimes feel that same way when it's winter and it's just a little bit too long of a winter around here like it can be.
Yeah, the length is really what got me in Summit. When it was still snowing in June, that's not right.
Exactly, yes. You know, you devoted one of your smoke signal columns in the Mountain Gazette to the Mountain Gazette, basically. It was called Upwards, and like a lot of other people, I enjoyed the Mountain Gazette. When in doubt, go higher was your tagline. And it had an interesting initial run, then ceased publication, then you helped resurrect it as a co-owner, and I think for 12 years you were the editor, and stepped down in 2013. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement with that great publication and what made it work?
Well, I was a fan of the Gazette. I moved to New Mexico from Points East in 1976. That shows you how many winters I have under my belt. And I almost immediately started hanging out in Silver City I went to the university there, Western New Mexico University. I almost immediately started hanging out with a bunch of similar reprobates, and they turned me on to the Mountain Gazette, and I'd never heard of it. The Gazette existed from 72 to 79, and it was based in the Roaring Fork Valley. I mean, a lot of people here, I don't think, know that, but I almost said sugar daddy, the guardian angel was a man named George Stranahan.
Right.
And it ran its course by 79, and I came across a stack of Mountain Gazettes, old Mountain Gazettes, you know, looking through the Ed Abbey stories and the Galen Rowell stories at pretty much at a time that I decided to quit the Summit Daily News after 10 years. And I went out and hiked the Colorado Trail for the second time with the idea of figuring out what's next. I'm a master at doing things like quitting jobs with no plan. And during that hike, I decided to at least investigate the possibility of relaunching the Mountain Gazette. And one thing led to another, and in 2000, that's exactly what we did. It was George Stranahan was, of course, the main person behind it, but Curtis Robinson, who had a pretty good run as a journalist here in the Roaring Fork Valley with the Aspen Daily News, the Roaring Fork Sunday, the Glenwood Post. We launched it. We based it in Summit County, and in 2006, for a number of reasons, we sold it. And it was not the smartest thing I've ever done in my life. And it got sold again. It got sold again to some people in the East, and they just didn't sustain it. In 2013, they closed it down.
What do you think made it work for all those wonderful articles that were there and the great artwork on the cover?
Well, the covers, that was a big thing. And when we resurrected, we had to figure out a way to make sure our covers were up to snuff. And we probably spent as much time, and we definitely spent as much money on our covers as we did the rest of the publication. What made it work? I think one of the main things was that I've never been a very good editor, even though I was the editor. And my lack of ability as an editor led me to develop a editorial style that was basically leave the writer's work alone as much as you can. Right. I mean, my editing policy was the Hippocratic Oath of editing, and that is first do no harm. and not too many editors subscribe to that policy.
I can attest to that, yes.
Yeah, when something didn't work for me, I would send it back to the writer and ask them to work on it and fix it. And I think because of that philosophy, quite by accident, the narrative flow of our stories was uninterrupted. It was not messed up by editorial intervention. Sometimes it didn't work.
Right.
But, you know, that's right. That was one of the things. We did not worry about attempting to achieve perfection. We wanted, Colorado's a really good storytelling state. People don't think of that as Colorado, but this is a state where people sit around the campfire and tell stories about what they did.
Absolutely.
And we tried to be the transcriptive equivalent of sitting around the campfire, yeah, telling stories about what people did on the slopes or in town that day.
Well, you're a really good storyteller, and, you know, we've been telling stories around the campfire as long as we've been human, and that's what affects people is a good story. So definitely I appreciate your storytelling ability.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a part of humanity that is fading fast.
It's unfortunate. I think part of it might be due to people's attention span isn't long enough to read a long article or to tell a long story, and nobody listens because their attention span's shot.
Yeah, and I'm as guilty as anybody. I notice, you know, I spend time on the internet and looking at my phone, and I don't know what the future lies for storytelling, but hopefully it'll resurrect. Hopefully it will.
I think it will, too. I have faith in storytelling. Very powerful, very powerful element. If someone who is talking with you right now who wouldn't have hardly any humor at all if it wasn't for self-deprecating humor, I enjoy your sense of humor. It's been said of you, and I think by Jefferson Dodge, the fact that your humor is self-defacing marks all your work, yet it is also defiant. Is that an accurate description? What did he mean?
Well, I certainly have the utmost respect for Jeff Dodge. He's now the public information officer at Colorado State University and a terrific guy. And probably there might have been a good chance that I would have written that myself and then asked him to just put his name on it. but who knows? Yeah, I mean, the humor is another thing that is, I kind of wonder where it's going. And maybe the world is just so messed up that it's not, I mean, but you do, you know, you look at Steve Colbert and stuff. Humor is alive, but in written form, I mean, we're becoming a real serious world. I mean, I look at the Roaring Fork Valley here, and it's not an area that I'm intimately familiar with. I've spent a little bit of time here, and the publications in the Roaring Fork Valley are very, very competent. And I mean, competent enough that other places should emulate the quality of publications here. I wish Silver City, New Mexico would. Funny? I'm not seeing funny. And this is a... this is a place based on fun. The Colorado High Country is based on fun, and I'm not seeing it reflected in publications. I don't know why that is. Now, as far as self-deprecating humor on my part, I have been a screw-up my entire life. I don't have to make things up to laugh at myself. It's a pretty easy thing to do.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That's why I said that. Absolutely. You know, you've said brevity is not your style. And you know, you wrote features I read in High Country News and wish you wrote for them again. But it is seemingly for a lot of people, their attention span is just not long enough to read a really good in-depth feature article, whether it's about Bears Ears National Monument or whether it's about whatever it is. And I think that's sad. And people do take themselves way too seriously.
Well, one of the obligations of anybody who's writing is to make sure that they maintain the reader's attention. And storytelling techniques intertwined with humor is certainly part of that. Now, is humor appropriate for every subject? probably so. I think right. It should be. I mean, if you can't get a giggle in on a Bears Ears story, then maybe you shouldn't be writing it. But anyway, the High Country News, their current regime doesn't seem to like me very much. So I haven't written for them in a while. But that's a pretty straight-laced publication. It's an important publication. It's a wonderful publication. I have recently said to them, I think they should lighten up a little bit, and I don't think it endeared me to their editorial staff very much. But
That's too bad.
Yeah, long form stories. I mean, you look at the New Yorker, you look at the Sun, you look at these public Smithsonian. These are great magazines that still maintain long form stories. But it may be just a real limited audience.
That well could be. One of your stories that I really appreciated a lot, because I'm a person born in the year of the dog. I've had dogs my whole life when I was a kid. But your story, Little Dog from Smoke Signals, is way over the top. I mean, you put yourself out there, you open yourself up and deal with this dog in a very heartfelt way. And I don't know whether we should break the surprise of whether you kept the dog or not at this point.
Well, the dog in question is in my house in Silver City, New Mexico these years
right.
later. Well, I mean, it was a weird thing. I had the perfect dog for 13 years. And as dogs do, you know, it was her life came to a too short of an end, and it was a couple of years before I was able to go get another dog. And I wanted to really make sure that the dog that I went after, that I sought out, was not going to be a replacement per se for this wonderful dog that I had all those years.
Right.
So I got a dog that looked different, that had a different demeanor, and it ended up that my dog Callie, who lived 13 years, we bonded at the animal shelter. I mean, the
right.
people in the shelter in Summit County observed. They called it my dog before I left on my first visit. It took me a solid year to get that bond with this new dog, this little dog. And my concern was as much, was I the right human for her as it was, is she the right dog for me?
Right.
And I still don't know if I shouldn't have maybe taken her back to the rescue group to for her to find her soulmate. I never figured we were soulmates, but we've certainly come to a very productive accommodation after 7 years, and she's no longer a little dog. She's a fat little thing now.
I just really appreciated that story. Very human.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Are you still working on a new book written, I understand, by pencil, and why a pencil? what's it about?
How do you know all this stuff about me? That's kind of I did a trip a little more than 3 years ago now. And I bought a little camper trailer, and I drove back east to reconnect with the places of my youth. I spent my first 12 years, I was born in England, of a military family, and spent my first 12 years in the northernmost reaches of the Adirondack Mountains in a town called Plattsburgh. And then my stepfather moved us to the south, to Frankfort, Kentucky, and then to Gloucester, Virginia. So I decided, and I came from a really, really, I don't want to dwell on it, but from an extremely dysfunctional family. I mean, violently, insanely dysfunctional. And I decided, who knows why, to do this road trip to reconnect with the places of my youth. So this book project, which is called Back East, is half Fahey road trip, which is, you know, this crazy stuff that happens to me when I'm on the road, combined with reconnecting to this, you know, often painful background. And so it's a real dichotomous thing. My agent's not sure that it's going to work. And I had numerous false starts on when I got back to New Mexico. I had numerous false starts in writing it. It just wasn't happening, to the point that I said, maybe I just wasted that 2 months that on this trip. Maybe it's not going to happen, or maybe it's going to happen in 20 years. And one day I just picked up a pencil and just started writing it out. And I'm a couple hundred thousand words into it now, which is about two-thirds of the way through. I thought I would have it done by December, but then I came to the Roaring Fork Valley and took a job with the Aspen Daily News. So anyway, it just started flowing, being written by hand. And I don't have any explanation for why that is, except for the fact that most professional writers have a self-editing mode that is hard to turn off.
Exactly.
And I did not let that self-editing mode join me on that journey. I just wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and it's going to have to be cut and cut and cut and cut, but I'll deal with that at another time.
Well, apparently you've done that before in a lot of your articles where they were, 7,500 words, and you wrote 10 to 15 to 20 and had to trim them back at many drafts. So that's quite disciplined to be able to do that.
Well, when I was writing the smoke signals columns for the Mountain Gazette, which I did monthly, I figured that I would probably be turning those columns into a book at some time. Okay. So I told the full story every time I wrote them, and I had room for, I forget what the word count was, 2,000 words or whatever.
Yeah.
Some of them topped out at 20,000 words.
Okay.
So once I finished that, I would have to cut them down. But as I was writing them, I knew what sections would be removed and stuff. So it was, but I like telling the full story, which oftentimes includes tangents. Tangents is another art form that seems to be dying. As a matter of fact, we have a thing in Silver City called the Southwest Festival of the Written Word that I'll be participating in again this September, and my talk is going to be on the subject of creative tangents.
I come from an Oklahoma family. We call it Oklahoma Chop Logic, where the train goes one place, and you put a couple of cars over here, and you go do all this, and then finally you get back and get to that car you left, but people aren't following you. They miss it. They miss the whole thing.
Yeah, and my favorite writers, John Nichols, who's a New Mexico writer, and Pat Conroy, the late Pat Conroy, and Richard Rousseau, these are people who enjoy a good tangent.
Exactly.
And there's numerous kinds of tangents, but I basically, we're in a point in the literary world right now where people are wanting to write it as short as possible, you know, cut it, the story down to the bone. And it's like, no, if a story's not worth 100,000 words, then it's not worth writing.
What sort of advice or inspiration would you tell young people who are just now, they've got that desire, they've got that passion, that burning flame inside, they just have to write. What would you give to them for advice?
Marry somebody with a real job.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best advice.
Because you were, like you just said, if they just write it and write it and keep writing it in their journal, that practice, eventually they find their voice, don't you think?
Well, and you mentioned a very important word there. Voice is a thing that's really, really missing in a lot of writing right now. And the voice that I guess my voice, for better or for worse, I mean, I was born of an English family, raised in the South. I mean, those are places with extreme storytelling traditions.
For sure.
And people develop their voice. And, yeah, certainly the development of the voice, but I'm actually writing a little Facebook thing on that subject, and because somebody asked me that same question recently. And at a minimum, I would say that when you feel inspired to write, no matter what you're doing, if you're having sex, stop having sex and get up and write. And because there can be plenty of times when you have to write, and it's the last thing in the world you want to do. And when inspiration hits, pull out a cocktail napkin. Never go anywhere without a pen and a paper.
Yes.
Nothing more frustrating. Of course, a lot of people use their dictaphones on their phone, and I do that too. So marry well. Consider getting a degree in accounting, and write when inspiration strikes.
Because if you don't, it goes somewhere else. I've discovered it really does.
It's hard to re-remember stuff.
Right.
That's for sure.
I've discovered that over the years as I get older. You know, you're an avid outdoorsman who's hiked the 2,100-mile Appalachian Trail, the 850-mile Arizona Trail, and a portion of the Continental Divide Trail. From your perspective, this show is about for land's sake, about really caring for the land. From your perspective, what is the biggest threat or threats to public land today, especially with this current administration?
Well, you sort of answered the question by asking it. I mean, this current administration is really frightening. It is... I will localize it here a little bit. I really do not let industrial recreation off the hook. That's one of the things that you asked me earlier, what chased me out of Colorado, and that's certainly one of the things. I mean, this is a this is a place, and it's not just this place, where expanding a ski area is okay, you know, and it's not. It's a clear cut, and it causes traffic on the interstate. I could go into a long spiel on that, but I think that it's one of the biggest threats is outdoor recreationists, our people, our kith and kin, as it were, not looking in the mirror. And Colorado is, there's a reason why people want to move here, because it's beautiful and there's a lot of cool stuff. But I do not think that outdoor recreationists look in the mirror enough. And I'm one of them. I mean, I'm a guilty party. The trail building mentality right now is out of control in this country. It's out of control, and everybody thinks that, well, you're building a trail. You know, what harm can that do? It does. It can do a lot of harm. So, there's the Trump administration. There's also us.
Very good point. Absolutely. You have any parting thoughts, or you can even take shots at me if you'd like. I haven't had any taken for a while. So, what are your future plans, John?
Well, I'm going to go back to New Mexico. I've had a pleasant run up here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I had a free place to stay for the winter. And immediate plans are to, get back into the desert and hike up in the Gila. The place I live in, New Mexico, is the site of the world's first legally designated wilderness area.
Right.
And our town's kind of funky and it's weird, dysfunctional. I mean, it's New Mexico, it's dysfunctional.
Right.
But the Gila wilderness in our back. So I need to get back there and start getting my feet planted back in what I consider my native habitat.
It's something I miss a lot. I hiked across the Gila there from south to north when I was younger, and I love that country that you're from. And what in our last closing minutes here would you pick as your favorite book that you've written?
Oh, that I've written.
Right.
I was going to jump in a favorite
okay.
book that I.
Well, you could do that too.
There's little doubt that it would be Smoke Signals, which was my last book. I exerted absolute editorial control over the process, and there have just been too many times on book projects where I have allowed. I mean, when somebody says, "I'll publish your book," I mean, as a writer, you're sitting there thinking, "I will go clean your toilet if you'll publish
right.
my book."
Okay.
And there's a lot of times where you get it back and you say, "I should have stood up for this. I should have pushed for this." And with Smoke Signals, I did not. I did employ the services of a person whose opinion I trusted to make observations to me about the content, but I did not let anybody mess with the content. Is that egotistical? I've been doing this for 35 years. I think I have a right to be egotistical in that regard.
Absolutely. I really appreciate the books you've written, the ones I've read, and anyone who's listening can go to your library and sit down here in Garfield County and plug in the name John Fahey and pick up some books that you certainly...
Or a bookstore.
Or a bookstore, yeah, that's true. Bookstore would help, wouldn't it, John?
Yeah, it does.
helps your paycheck.
The beer in Aspen is very expensive.
Right, it is, isn't it? How much longer will you be in Aspen?
Probably till Sunday.
Okay, and then you're heading back to New Mexico.
The Aspen Daily News is graciously attempting to convince me to stay a little bit longer, but I'm gonna zigzag back to New Mexico. Yeah.
I just came from the desert here last week. It made me pretty sore, but I've got to get back to the desert every once in a while just to get my desert rat.
Well, this is the time of year where you probably want to be staying here.
Well,
I was just up on Independence Pass just today, and boy, the smell of the air at 12,000 feet is tough to beat, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Well, I did experience a sandstorm for 2 days, but other than that, it was great.
Nothing like the taste of dirt.
That's right. Well, listen, I appreciate very much Riley Burley here is our engineer today, and thank you so much for being with us, John. It's been fun.
My pleasure.
Tune in to our next show on Tuesday, June the 13th at 4:30 here on KDNK. Until then, whatever you do to Mother Earth, do it for land's sake.